Enslave the liberty of but one human being, and the liberties of the world are put in peril. And this week's opening quote comes from William Lloyd Garrison. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. And it's nice to be back, folks. I've had a couple of weeks off air because I've been travelling. You may hear a little bit of background noise on today's show as well. I'm staying in a motel near LAX, and there's a little bit of traffic outside. You may hear the aircon kick in occasionally and all this sort of stuff as well. I've got the heater on. It's kind of cold here. And I'm pre-recording this show on, it's a Tuesday today, and I'm going to edit the video tomorrow on Wednesday, and then Thursday I fly back to Australia, and I should get home to Australia just in time to post this video in time for this week's show. That's the plan, anyway. And I've just finished a week of contemplation deciding what I'm going to do with myself, whether I was going to accept the many speaking dates I've actually been offered now that I'm away from Australia again. This tends to happen. When I go travelling, folks, people find out that I'm away from my shores, and so I get offered all sorts of dates. I was offered a talk in Arizona next month, and I have been offered to speak at G. Edward Griffin's Red Pill Expo in June, and also at AV10 in the UK in May. But I've declined all of the talks, folks, because I just really would like to honour my decision to spend this year at home. So as much as I respect all of these people and I respect all of their conferences that they're having, and I do recommend if you're in the area you go to check out these conferences, I have decided to honour my decision to return home and have this year off and get some work done on the films and just get some work done on myself. Travelling really does take a toll on your health, ladies and gentlemen. But of course, I've just been at the Anarcapulco conference in Mexico last week, and I found the conference to be a great success. I really did. There's been a lot of mixed reports coming out about the conference, and personally, I don't have a problem with any of it. I had a fantastic time there. I met a lot of really good people, and I thought the conference ran pretty smoothly considering the magnitude of such an event. To make it a little personal a little bit, just for a second, there has been a lot of reports coming out about the new management of the conference, a lady called Jessica Kill, who is employed to manage the event this year. And there's been a lot of reports people have been having problems with Jessica, and I would like to put it out there and officially say that I have no problem whatsoever with Jessica Kill. My involvement with Jessica Kill was that she booked my flights. My flights were late and all sorts of stuff went wrong, which was the airline's problem. And when I ended up stuck in LA and I had a young friend traveling with me, which was completely unrelated to the conference, I called Jessica and she came through for me. She got flights organized for me. She even organized flights for my young traveling companion when she didn't need to do that. And so I have nothing negative to say about the conference at all. I had a great time, and I have nothing negative to say about Jessica Kill. She was very nice to me. She welcomed me when I arrived. And as I said, she looked after me when I was stuck and needed help. I reached out to her and she came through for me. So it's a good thing, folks. So, as I said, I have nothing negative to say about any of it, and I had a great time while I was there. I saw some fantastic speakers there. Mark Passio's presentation was an absolutely brilliant presentation. Luckin Rose was brilliant. David Icke's talk was great. Benny Wills from Joy Camp was absolutely awesome. Benny is a real talent, folks. You've got to see something that he did this year. I tried to get a video of it for you, but it didn't quite work out. The audio was so bad. But if you're looking at the Anarcapulco presentations this year, check out Benny Will's performance of a poem that he calls Peter Piper's Pickle. It's absolutely next-level stuff, folks. You've got to check this one out. But that's my report for Anarcapulco, folks. I found the event to be really good, and it was really good to see Jeff Berwick a bit more relaxed this year and actually in the crowd and hanging around and mingling and spending a bit more time with people, because he had some management looking after things for him and he didn't have to worry about all that sort of stuff. And I'm actually a little disappointed that some people have been posting their views of what they think the problems were. I think a lot of this stuff should be sorted out internally. There's no point attempting to discredit a conference and tear it apart. If there are problems, then we need to discuss these problems so that the problems can be ironed out and these issues will not happen again. And for those people who've been posting private correspondences and personal emails. I think this is not acceptable, folks. I really do. I mean, even people that are doing it saying it's being done in the name of transparency, I think it's kind of crossing that line that we don't cross. Something that is private is something that is private. If I send a private correspondence to someone and they were to publish it publicly, I would frankly never trust that person again. And I would never trust a person who I see publish a private correspondence. This is a sort of thing that makes me think, well, I should never share anything truly personal with this person because I have no guarantee that it will remain in the private. And I think it's just an unfortunate thing to do, and I don't think people should be posting their private correspondences with others, because private correspondences are delivered with the expectation that they will remain private, and I just think it's crossing a line that we shouldn't cross. But anyway, that's all I really wish to say about Acapulco, folks. That's my report on the conference. I had a great time. And to return to the show and to return to the opening quote for a second and the discussion of liberty and what liberty actually means and what happens when you remove the liberty of even one person. Liberty is the basis of all freedom and the basis of our society if we are to have a society, ladies and gentlemen. You know, when we even look at what we're given as mainstream history, if we are to accept any of it as fact at all, when we look at things such as World War I, World War II, as I said, even if the mainstream version is correct, the purpose of these wars was to protect the freedom of our nations. Apparently the purpose of all wars is to protect the freedom of our nations. Well, that's what the soldiers are led to believe anyway. That is the pretense under which they are drafted and sent out to fight these wars, the concept that they are actually doing so to protect freedom. And yet we see situations now where those very freedoms are being removed by the governments of our respective nations. Very significantly, David Icke was just banned from entering Australia because the government decided that it didn't like what he may possibly say. And it wasn't even the government that made this decision. It was some form of anti-defamation league, which is essentially three people in a small office somewhere who just pressured the government into not allowing David Icke to have the freedom of speech to enter Australia. And folks, irrespective of what you think of David Icke and what you believe and what you think of the message he delivers, well, as once said by someone, I'm not sure who it may have been, Patrick Henry, I disagree with what you say, but I will fight to defend your right to say it. And freedom of speech is the basis of our society. This is what we fought wars to protect. And if the government is now legislating against freedom of speech, then the Australian government has openly declared itself to be an enemy of freedom and therefore an enemy of the people. It's made this announcement with this declaration, this action of banning David Icke from entering the country. The Australian government has made a formal announcement that it now stands against freedom and is therefore the enemy of the people. Think about it, folks. That's what has been said with this statement, because freedom of speech is the basis of our society. And who is a democratic government of elected officials to decide whether or not they will tolerate dissent or tolerate what people will say? They simply don't have the right to make this decision, ladies and gentlemen. And even attempting to make this decision places the Australian government in abuse of the office that they hold, and, as I said, is an open declaration of that government that they stand against freedom, and therefore they stand as an enemy of everything that it means to live in a democratic society. And not only that, folks, but what it does is it stands as a clear demonstration of how easily the government can be pressured by a foreign power, because, of course, the anti-defamation society that has decided that it would be best if David Icke did not come to Australia is a society run by Israel. Of course, what they've used is the concept that David Icke is a Holocaust denier and that he'll be speaking about the Holocaust and that he'll be speaking about vaccines. This is what the Australian government has used as an excuse to ban him from the country. But like I said, folks, the Anti-Defamation League is a Jewish Israeli-run organization. It's not part of the Australian government. And what this demonstrates is the inordinate amount of influence a small group of people representing a foreign power can have over the Australian government. And this should be a wake-up call for everybody. It really should. I mean, this is something that the Australian people seriously need to pay attention to. There should be a massive amount of pressure being put on the politician. I believe it was Mr. Coleman who did this. I may have got the name wrong, but I think it was Mr. Coleman. And also the latest unelected embarrassment we have masquerading as the Prime Minister. These people should have an enormous amount of pressure put on them due to making this decision, because this decision is anti-freedom and it is not something that should be accepted by the Australian people. Of course, Australia could more rightly be named Apathralia, and it's doubtful that the Australian people will do anything about it. Unfortunately, the vaccinations and the amount of fluoride in the water seems to have most definitely taken its toll on these people. But at least we can try to motivate them into some sort of action, because this spells a very, very dangerous time for the future of Australia. If these politicians are able to get away with this, if they're going to be allowed to get away with this type of open corruption, an open stance against freedom, then Australia is in for a very, very dangerous and very sad future. And there actually seems to be very little that Australians can do about this situation, especially legally. You know, we can't use the legal system in order to find remedy from government, because the government created the legal system. That's the problem. You know, the only real way to get out of this system, to extricate ourselves from this situation, is for people to wake up to what's going on and disconnect from the system. Because we'll find no remedy from the legal system. Even if we find the politicians to be criminals, even if we can prove they're criminals, we still won't find remedy from the legal system, because they run the legal system. This has been greatly evidenced, actually, just a few days ago with the arrest of Elihai Priest in Australia. And I don't know all of the details of this case, so I can't really give you the full story on what's going on, but I do know that Elihai Priest has been arrested. He had information concerning corruption at the highest level in Australia, implicating Scott Morrison in some sort of misdealings. I really don't know the details. But he presented the information to the Australian police. He had a meeting organised with the Australian police to take the information to them, and was detained by Australian Federal Police, by Scott Morrison's own security team, on his way to present that evidence, and nobody really knows what's happened from that point. He's been detained without charge or trial simply because he has evidence implicating the Prime Minister in some sort of underhanded activity. So this is what happens when you try to use the legal system against the government, folks. It doesn't work. You know, the government is corrupt. The Australian government is completely corrupt, and so is their legal system. But it's very important that people make noise about what's happened to Elihai Priest. Do ring the Australian Human Rights Commission. Ring the Prime Minister's office. I mean, ring everybody that you can and make this as public as possible, because irrespective of what you think of Elihai Priest, if we allow one person to be detained without charge or trial and held in this manner simply because they are attempting to shine the light on government corruption, then again, we are heading for a very sad and sorry future for this country. So I do urge people to get involved in that case. And if anybody can send me information on what has actually happened with Elihai Priest and what information he had on the Prime Minister, what the whole thing was all about, it would definitely help the matter. It would help me get the information out. Anyway, though, I believe there was something about money laundering, CIA money laundering through something close to the Prime Minister's office. And I also have heard a rumour that Elihai hacked the government database and actually admitted that he'd hacked the government database in order to get proof of this crime that had been committed. So that may be a complication as well. I mean, if he's done that, which was kind of putting the cart before the horse, I mean, you can't commit a crime in the investigation or revelation of a crime. I mean, especially if the crime is being committed by government, because, of course, the government runs a legal system and they will use that against you and prevent you from moving the matter forward. And that could possibly be what has happened in this case as well. But again, if anybody out there actually has information about this case and they could get me up to speed on it, I would be most appreciative, and I will mention it on the next show, or maybe I'll even do a special report on it and release it before the next show, because there definitely needs to be some light shined on this case. We can't have a man wasting away incarcerated without charge or trial simply because he's attempting to reveal government corruption. It's simply not acceptable. So, yeah, any information that anybody has on that case that they would like to send me, that would be great. Unfortunately, I'm not familiar with Elihi's work, so I can't really comment too much further than what I have. And I've been offline, mostly off social media for the last week or so. So I'm a little bit behind the eight ball as far as what's going on social media and what's going on the ground. I just needed to do it, folks. I just needed to unplug for a week, and I just needed to decompress in some way and try to figure out what my moves were for the rest of the year. And as always, as it would appear, whenever I do have some time offline, everything seems to turn pear-shaped while I'm not looking. Very interesting the way that works, folks. Every time I have time off, I come back and I find that the whole world has collapsed around me, and I really shouldn't have had time off. It's just the way it goes, folks. The world seems to work in mysterious ways. But I'm really glad that I did it anyway. I really am. It was interesting spending time in Jim Morrison's old hotel in West Hollywood. And West Hollywood, folks, I mean, what a strange place this is. I'd heard that West Hollywood had gone reasonably gay, but when I went out one night for like 1 hour, I walked about 5 blocks just because I thought I'd have a look, and I was kind of shocked. I mean, it's Sodom and Gomorrah, folks. I mean, what can I say? I'm not religious, but just the view that you get looking in the windows of places as you're walking down the sidewalk, I mean, it's Sodom and Gomorrah. It almost makes one look at the religious version of things and think, well, yes, we're definitely in the end times. This is not normal behavior. But that's just the area of Hollywood I was in. Like I said, it was kind of interesting to be in Jim Morrison's old hotel and just to feel the energy of the place. And I had a couple of days of reflecting to do, so that's where I went. But I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, one of the things that is quite sobering about these journeys, these peregrinations that I do around the world, I mean, you know, we go to these conferences, we do these radio shows, and we talk about the awakening, how many people are actually becoming aware that something's terribly wrong, and yeah, many people are. Even many people that I would speak to in shops and whatever around West Hollywood, when I went over to the CVS store, when I went across to the weed store across the road, and even the liquor store next door to the place that I was staying, you know, where you go to buy milk for your cup of tea. You know, talk to these people and they all know that there's something terribly wrong, but then when you step out and you look at the bigger world, look at the bigger society we live in, there is no real awakening that's happening, ladies and gentlemen. It's as sad as it is to admit it, there is no real movement on the ground. There's nothing really changing. In fact, the world is deteriorating very, very rapidly. And many people that I think are actually more awake than they revealed, I mean, they simply don't want people to know that they're waking up. They're kind of cowed. They know something's terribly wrong, but they don't want anyone to know that they think so because they're just scared. But even having said that, there is a form of awakening to a certain degree, simply because of the information people are consuming now. You know, the new information that's been made available to them that they can't help but consume because it's there. You know, and with a lot of the information that we've been looking at recently, the concept of Lost Tartaria, what it really was, the concept that they've changed history. This has been a concept that many people have found completely repulsive. Many people have been completely horrified by any concept that history has been fabricated. They find it a very, very difficult thing to deal with because, of course, many researchers in the independent media even have based their entire concept of what's going on in the world on their concept of a history, and if they find out that this history has been fabricated, it's a big challenge for them to be able to step back and look at things a little more widely. I mean, you know, a lot of the stuff that they're looking at is probably quite factual, but it's just adjusting your perspective to the timeline that you're given and realizing that a lot of the stuff that we're given probably wasn't thousands of years ago, it was only hundreds of years ago. So all of this stuff has been hugely revealing to people, and it's been interesting to see the wave that it's created. But at the same time, there's a lot of people out there that are tainting this information, a lot of people claiming fact on theory, stuff we just don't know. You know, like what we can figure out is that this civilization was there. I mean, we know that there was a civilization that existed not too long ago. We know that the main center of it was Tartaria, and we know that it's been expunged from history. We know the things such as the orphan trains happened. We know there was some form of cataclysm that happened quite recently. This isn't stuff that we have to speculate. It's stuff that we know. The problem is we just don't know how it all occurred. And we don't know what the real details of this are. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people claiming, well, yes, this is it. And other people are claiming something different, of course. And so, again, you get people at loggerheads with each other. People just aren't really looking at the bigger picture. They're too intent on finding someone to point the finger at rather than dealing with the current predicament that we find ourselves in. You know, actually, you know, what I found out about Tartaria when I first realized, I mean, the true depth of it, when it really sank into me just what has been taken from us. I mean, it was quite empowering to know that this happened quite recently, but at the same time, it was a sense of profound sadness that overtook me, you know, like really profound sadness at just how far we've been taken from what we were and what we should be. You know, the state of the human condition now is truly nothing like what it should be to be a human being. And it really takes me back, you know, even discovering this stuff about Tartaria, it kind of takes me back to when I was 4 years old and I realized that this was the wrong world. I was living in the wrong world. You know, back when I realized that we had to buy land and I was so horrified by the concept at 4 years old. And I used to ask my teddy bear, could he please tell God that he'd put me onto the wrong world and could he please take me off this world and put me back onto the world I was supposed to be on? You know, but then you kind of grow up through life and you forget about these feelings, you forget about these thoughts, and you just accept things for being the way they are. You kind of wonder why things are the way they are, but you just accept it. Okay, this is what our society is, this is what the human race does. But the discovery of Tartaria and the discovery of free energy and all the stuff that we had, you know, what we would essentially deem magic if we saw it today, you know, this magical world, the visions that are painted in the Michelangelo portraits and the Leonardo da Vinci paintings and all this sort of stuff, these were not fictions, folks. This was the world that we lived in. It was far more paradisical than the world that we live in today. The technology that we think frees us does not free us. It enslaves us. Sure, I'm using technology to bring you this information, but what other choice do I have? I can't go and stand on the mountain and get you all to come and listen. It's just not going to work. You know, we can use this technology to benefit ourselves and to at least wake people up to their own power, and that's what I've been attempting to do through all this, because looking at all this, I mean, it's just the problem that people are in this state of hypnosis, this Stockholm syndrome that they're in. They worship their leaders. They think their leaders are going to save them. They think Trump's going to save the day. They think politics actually has some rhyme or reason and actually means something. They think kings and rulers are real. They think that what they're told on the television is real, and they just simply live their lives with blinkers on. It's like people with blindfolds driving dodging cars. I mean, that's what the world seems to be, especially when you come to the United States here, wander around LA for a couple of weeks, and that's what the world appears to be, folks. So it does get kind of disheartening. You know, if you're out there and you live in a big city and you're saying, well, I'm not seeing any awake people around me, I can really sympathize with you. It does get disheartening. But, you know, through it all, it's almost like the human race is splitting into two separate species. It really is. Those who are awake are becoming more awake, and those who are asleep are unfortunately becoming more and more asleep. And they're fighting against any form of wakefulness in many cases. You know, the Stockholm syndrome is so bad, the cognitive dissonance is so bad, that even when they begin to see the light at the end of the tunnel, they simply pull the blinders down because they don't want to know. It's such an offense to them for them to even consider that the world may not be the way they grew up thinking it was. You know, it's a very confrontational thing for a lot of people, especially as you get into somewhere around my age in life. Even when you get into 40 or 50, you know, younger than me, you know, you start to realize that you've spent the last 40 or 50 years doing things that you didn't need to do. It's been completely meaningless, completely unnecessary, because everything you were doing was based on false parameters, based on a false understanding of what reality was, and you continue to measure yourself according to external parameters and search for happiness outside yourself, and really never had the time to actually find yourself and realize what you are, realize what this world is, realize what we could do with this place if we were simply able to express the art of being ourselves. You know, just that realization alone is what will change. So, well, that's why there's no remedy in politics, folks. There isn't. You know, you've got to see how far we've been taken from our path. And realize that politics is what's done it all. It's the government systems that have done it all. Just our belief that these things are real. It's a joke. I mean, they're not real. They're just theatre and manufactured. And most of the wars are manufactured. Most of the villains are manufactured. Most of the shootings are staged. Most of them don't even happen, folks. They're just media propaganda stunts. And I suspect that that's the way it is with many of the wars as well. You know, we just don't know. A lot of the stuff that we're told is happening in Syria doesn't appear to be happening on the ground. A lot of the stuff that we're told is happening in Venezuela doesn't appear to be happening on the ground either. So it's just the way the media portrays things to whip up public opinion and get the public behind whatever actions it is the government wants to do, which is all about depopulation, control of resources, and locking people down further and further. I mean, it's turned into a sideshow, folks. The whole world has turned into a sideshow. And spending a couple of weeks in LA by myself without having anybody around has really shown me just how much of a sideshow it is. You know, every other time I've come here, I've stayed with people. I've stayed at Benny Will's place or at Rachel's place or somebody's place. You know, I've stayed at people's places when I've been here. But this time I thought, no, I'm just going to come here. I'm going to get a motel and go right up into the thick of it, stay at Jim Morrison's old hotel and just sit there and observe for a few days and see what this world is really all about. Talk to as many people as I can. I didn't go out and socialise, but I went out and socialised in as much as I spoke to people on the street. I spoke to shopkeepers. I was just a friendly guy. I spoke to the hotel owners. Spoke to people in the units next door. I just sort of communicated with people and just got a general overview of what people were thinking. And it was very educational, ladies and gentlemen. It really was. You know, sometimes you find out more about the world by studying general consensus on the ground than you do by studying any type of political moves or observing the world situation at all. I mean, sometimes you can just get a real feel for things just by talking to people in whatever town it is you happen to be in. And that's one of the beautiful things about traveling, folks, is that you get to meet real people. You get to see them on the ground in their own situations. And you get to observe, and you get to communicate, and you get to hear what their view is about things. And if you just listen and don't attempt to put your political viewpoint in there, and that's what I often do, I just attempt to listen to them and hear what they say. Sometimes I'll plant a few seeds. I planted some wonderful seeds with an Uber driver I had the other day, a wonderful woman called Bridget, and she had quite an education while we were driving along in the Uber. It was kind of good. So there are opportunities to do that, but very often it's good to just listen to what people are saying, because just listening to these people reveals for you the general consensus in the general population on the street, and it's an interesting thing to listen to, an interesting thing to discover, interesting perspective to have. And as I said, folks, often it's a lot more revealing than listening to news reports or mainstream sources. But I think we've reached break time here, folks, so I better leave it there for now, and we'll go and have a break. Thank you for joining me on this show today. It's always a pleasure to have your company. And I'll be back to speak to you again in a few minutes. Thanks for listening. And welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, look, I think we're in for a pretty interesting time in 2019, 2020. I think the next couple of years are going to be very, very revealing. Certainly we've seen the governments almost falling over themselves to lock things down. The surveillance grid is rolling out. Trump is talking about wanting to push 5G out as quickly as possible, and even 6G, and this is happening right around the world in every country except Israel, very interestingly, of course. The technology is developed in Israel, but Israel is not using the technology. Why do you think that would be, ladies and gentlemen? Interesting. But yeah, I think we're in for some pretty interesting times ahead, folks, and as I said previously, you know, the big awakening is just not happening. I mean, it's happening to a certain level, but it's not happening to the degree that we would want it to affect change. And so really some of the best advice I've got for people at this stage of the event is for them to buckle up and take preparations for their future and just be prepared for whatever happens to come, folks. And don't focus too much on businesses and all this sort of stuff. I mean, on where you're going to be in the business world, because I think the business world is going to be very different. I think the world is going to be very different within the next few years, folks. I think in 2025, 2026, we're going to be living in a very different reality to what we are now. You know, whether it's from the technology or whether it's from a new reset or whatever's going to happen, I just feel that there is change in the air. And there's a lot of people that are feeling the same way, I think. You know, and through all this, folks, I mean, we've done what we can to attempt to bring awareness to people. We've done what we can to affect change. And we still need to continue these efforts because we can still turn the ship of state around. But by the same token, it's good to prepare for all options and for all outcomes. And I think it would be prudent for people to pay a little bit of attention to what is happening and develop lines of communication with their friends, people around the world, people that you know on social media. Try to develop lines of communication with these people off social media and off the internet. And I know it's hard. I know it's very difficult. You know, we tend to be dependent upon the internet and upon our cell phones and all sorts of stuff for communication these days. And that's one of the real dangers. That's one of the places we've been led, kind of without knowing we were being led there. You know, back in the old days, we could write letters to people. We could do all sorts of stuff. You see, even the post offices sort of falling into the wayside now as well, because people don't really need to use them unless they need to send a parcel somewhere. But of course, there's Amazon that can do that with their drone delivery service. So, you know, you can see where the world is going, folks, and we're losing all of these lines of communication. We're also losing all of our knowledge. It's all being digitized. All the libraries are disappearing, and all of our access to nature and to the physical world around us, we're having a digital barrier put in front of it all, folks. You know, like the digitization of everything. Soon you'll need a password to get into your local park. You'll need a password to get into the school or whatever. And, of course, it won't be a password. It won't be a thumbprint. It will be a bioacoustic resonance or a retinal scan or something like that. They're making sure everyone needs to have smart devices, and you need to use these smart devices in order to interface with the real world around you. I mean, it's really quite clever the way they've done it, but it's becoming an integral part of this system. I mean, I don't see anybody not using smart devices anywhere I go. I mean, I don't use them, so I really notice how they are pushing this and how difficult it is for me to do everyday things that I used to do without having a smartphone and without using a credit card and without doing all the things that they expect you to do. For the name of convenience, of course. When really it's not about convenience, it's about surveillance, it's about tracking everything everybody does. I mean, this has been obvious for a while, but it's becoming more and more obvious. But I'm really noticing it, folks, because I don't use credit cards, I don't use a smartphone, I don't do any of that stuff. And when I travel, I'm really noticing that it's becoming more and more difficult for me to do so. It's becoming more and more difficult to shop in places. Even where I'm staying here in LA, there's a laundromat down the road. I mean, it's very difficult to get your washing done when you're traveling. There's a laundromat down the road, and it's a coinless laundry. Wouldn't you know it? A coinless laundry. It says coin laundry. You see it from a distance, and then you get up close, and there's a little less at the end of the coin. So you go in there, you need a credit card to do your washing. Interesting stuff. But that's how far they're taking it, folks. The most everyday, mundane activities, you need a digital interface in order to perform these everyday activities. Mark of the beast, folks. It's coming. It's here. And the thing is, you know, even with talking about that, people think, oh, I'll never accept a microchip. Well, as soon as you started using your credit card, you started using that mark, folks. So we're way beyond anything like that. You know, and one of the most profound things that's happened through all of this, I mean, even when you go back through my life, stuff I've seen since my childhood, you know, one of the biggest things that I've witnessed is a complete disconnection from nature. You know, we've become completely divorced from nature through the use of technology. And again, I mean, there's nothing wrong with technology. Technology and nature could actually complement each other if it was done properly. But what we've got at the moment is not doing that. And when you see just how far we've been removed from nature, even to the loss of life skills, to the loss of everything, a lot of people, you know, have never really gone and experienced the grass beneath their feet. Not really. I mean, they may have walked on the grass, but they've never really thought about the moment that they were experiencing. It was just something that was just a normal experience for them, nothing they ever had to think about. You know, like, we've become completely divorced from nature. And when you see just how far we have become divorced from nature, you begin to see that that is really the only way back out of this system. You know, it's to reconnect with what it means to be human. You know, reconnect with the earth that we live on. Realize that this is an incredible habitat that we have here. And we're destroying it. We're destroying it through legislation. I mean, as I've said so many times, every problem we face in the world today exists because it's legislated to exist. You know, that's the problem. That's the issue that people don't consider. You know, even when they see environmental destruction, environmental damage, they petition, they start some sort of a movement to go and try some sort of a cleanup operation. They don't really ever address the cause of the problem to begin with. You know, they think, oh, it's a corporation, it's an oil company or whatever is dropping waste around the place. But really, folks, the oil company is doing that because it's legislated that they can. You know, the government is the one that sits at the top and controls this whole mechanism. What sits behind it, what this evil force is that is attempting to destroy humanity, it's anybody's guess. You can put whatever speculation you want out there. But through it all, government is the interface that we have to get at the workings behind it. And every problem that we have in the world today exists because it's legislated to exist. Now, all of our restraint to addressing these problems happens because it's legislated to happen. Even with what just happened with Elijah Priest, you know, the fact that he was going to present information to the police which incriminated the Prime Minister, then he was arrested by Australian Federal Police. You know, a little bit one up the ladder from the regular police, who simply are able to go and deprive this man of his liberty because it's legislated that they can do so by the criminals who run the system, because the legislation exists to protect the criminals, not to protect the people. You know, we believe the legal system is there to provide remedy and, you know, to prevent the causation of harm and to provide remedy when harm is caused. And sure, that's what it's supposed to do on the surface, but ultimately, when you really step back and look at it, the fact that our governments are so corrupt and these are the ones who write the laws, you begin to realise that, yeah, all of that remedy is provided to people if they really work hard enough to get it, but behind all of that, the politicians have kind of left themselves out of the whole thing, whereby the law just doesn't seem to apply to them or to the police unless they need to make some public example of someone every now and then just to instill this feeling of confidence in the people so that we think that it actually does apply to politicians and police when it doesn't. It's just someone they've hung out to dry, and they've usually probably just done so as some sort of a media extravaganza, and the guy didn't even go to jail or go to whatever we were told he did anyway. I mean, most of this stuff is just theatre, folks. That's the problem. You know, people are just fed rubbish and they don't realise it and they just believe what they see on the television and they don't really have time to think about the real workings of the world and they don't really have time to think about what our society has become. And again, as I said, how divorced from nature we've become. You know, when's the last time people went and just sat outside? You know, when's the last time people had the time to do that? The kids these days don't even want to do that. They're just stuck in their iPads. When they do go outside, they're texting to their friends. I mean, they're just not seeing the world around them. I guess people just aren't looking up as well. I mean, that's why they're not noticing the spraying in the skies. That's why they're not noticing the world has changed so much in the last 50 years. And again, when you see this and you see just how far the technology has taken us away from what it means to be human, you begin to see that the only remedy is to return to that source, to return to what it means to be human, to return to nature. You know, and this is a difficult path for people to want to take, you know, because it means they have to do something themselves. And they don't want that. They want someone to legislate the change into being. They want the government to save them. You know, they just want to get the newsletter to tell them that the world has changed and they didn't have to do anything about it. You know, everybody knows there's a lot wrong, you know, something is terribly wrong with the world. But they don't really see society itself as being the problem. When it is. I mean, society, this is completely dysfunctional, this society. Now, even our cities, there's no reason for us to have constructed these things. There's nothing human about a city. There's nothing that benefits us about a city. You know, just living in a city makes you dependent upon the city. You don't know how to collect food. You don't know how to do any of this stuff. You just go and buy everything from a supermarket. Everything's there for you. But there's only 3 days' supply of any of it there. All they have to do is turn off the mechanism, and suddenly these cities will implode. And, you know, I look at that and I think of the concept of resets and I think of the concept of population control and the population destruction, and I see the cities as being a trap for this sort of thing. I mean, I see the cities, you know, people are being set up by even living in these spaces. I think that's what cities are for. They're just to corral people into one area, because it's easy for the whole thing to fall apart if they're all in one area, and it's easy to exterminate vast amounts of people at one time. I mean, I know I'm sounding pretty negative here, but I don't know. It's just from traveling around the world and looking at all this stuff, folks. I mean, coming to Mexico, seeing what's going on there, coming to LA and really stepping back and looking at this place with just my own eyes, just walking around, not with anybody, just meditating and just kind of standing on the corner and watching and just looking at things. You know, it brings a broader perspective. It really does. And I've done this in many places. I mean, I do this in Amsterdam. I do this in Spain. I do this in London. I do it in my own country. And sometimes I just go out there and stand around and look. And it's an interesting thing when you do that, folks. It gives you a far more realistic view of the world than what you'll get in newspapers or the television or on YouTube videos or anything like that. You know, and talking to people, I mean, sometimes it's difficult. Sometimes people look at you as if you've got some hideous deformity if you try to talk to them, if they're just a stranger on the street. But if you go and find a park somewhere, you know, find someone feeding the birds or something like that, you'll find that you usually can break into some sort of conversation with many of these people, and it's interesting if you just let them talk and let them give you their story and hear what they have to say. It's a very interesting thing to do, especially when you can do it across many different cities, you know, like across the world, many different cultures, you know, talking to people just randomly in Australia, in England, in the United States, in Holland, in Spain, even in Peru, if you can find people that speak English in many of these places, of course, but you can in many places, and it's just an interesting thing to do when you get that broader perspective and you get it on the ground from the people themselves. And, you know, off the beaten track, folks, I mean, if you're going to travel, I mean, I don't recommend that you go to the designated enjoyment zones, the regular tourist attractions and all that sort of stuff. See if you can get to know some people on the ground and open up a few doorways that way and learn what the real culture is and what the real lifestyle and what the real people are like and what the real stories are in the places that you're visiting. It's a very interesting thing to do. In fact, I think one of the most beneficial things people can do to heal themselves and thus heal the world in turn is to get out and travel, get out and see the world so you know what you're actually dealing with, because a lot of people comment on the world, but they've never actually gone and seen it. They've never removed themselves from their comfort zone and simply thrown themselves to the wind to see what happened. And sometimes if you do that, incredible things can happen, and it's always a very enlightening experience, folks. And if you're someone out there who's young, I encourage you to go traveling before you do anything, before you settle down, before you think about getting a real job you want to keep or anything like that. Go out and see the world. Change your perspective, because that's what it will do. It will give you a completely new perspective on life, a completely new perspective on who and what you are, and it's a hugely beneficial thing for anybody to do if they really want to know themselves and know what they can do to make change. You know, the world is there for you, folks, but you have to go out there and meet it first before you're really going to know how to understand it and what you can do to improve it, to really know what your path in life is. You have to go out and you've got to meet the world, ladies and gentlemen. It's right there for you. All you got to do is go and say hi. And actually, while I'm on the topic of saying hi, I'd like to put out an apology to several people who contacted me and wanted me to catch up with them while I was in LA. I actually have about 5 or 6 emails from people. And the problem is, folks, is that I just can't find the emails. I mean, people send me these messages and they kind of get lost in the pile. And there was at least 4 or 5, possibly 6 people who wanted to catch up. And unfortunately, you know, sometimes I forget as well. I mean, Acapulco, the entire experience was pretty overwhelming. I mean, the whole trip was pretty overwhelming. I actually arrived at the conference 2 days late because of flight delays. It was another interesting thing, folks, another one of those nightmare flights that I seem to have so many of. I guess it's because I travel so much. I mean, actually, the majority of flights that I take are actually quite good, but every now and then there's some sort of a ring-in that happens and I end up in some incredible drama for days on end. And that's kind of what happened with the trip to Acapulco. The original flight leaving Australia was 4 hours late, and so it was a domino effect from that point. I ended up stuck in LA for 36 hours. The actual trip to Mexico, which was supposed to be around about 25 or 26 hours from Australia, ended up being delayed a total in the end of 45 hours. So I arrived to Acapulco 45 hours late, and that was an amazing experience, folks. So I actually arrived there the day before I was supposed to speak, when I was supposed to have gotten there 2 days early. So I didn't actually get a chance to prepare any type of workshop or anything like that, but we had a pretty good sort of a workshop anyway. We had a pretty good sort of a gathering anyway. But that's the kind of a state that I was in once I got to Mexico. I mean, it took until the end of the conference that I was just starting to get over the jet lag. And then I had an interesting event on the night before I left, where I ended up staying up all night, which was due to no fault of my own, I can assure you, but that's another story that I'll say for another day. And so once I got to LA, basically I slept for the first 3 days that I arrived. So that made contacting people extremely difficult. And once I did get my wits about me and want to contact people, I simply couldn't find the messages that they'd sent me. And that's the problem, you know, I get so many emails and then I get messages on Facebook and I get messages on other platforms. And so I have these messages in my head and I want to answer them, but then I have to find the platform that sent me the message. I have to wade through and sift through the other messages to try to find the ones I'm looking for. And when you're in a jet lag state after a week of conferences and about 65 or 70 hours of extended travel, it becomes very difficult to do these things. So I do greatly apologise to the people that I didn't contact while I was in LA. I did want to, folks, but it just doesn't happen sometimes. But there'll be time next year anyway. I mean, we'll be back next year. I won't be travelling for the rest of this year because I really do want to stay home, although I have been offered a talk in September. Who knows, maybe I'll feel like travelling by September, but if not, then I will definitely be back in the United States in February next year because I'll be back in Mexico for Acapulco next year. And the people that I didn't catch up to this year, well, I'll make sure I've got time next year. I'll make sure I can spend a little bit more time around the LA, Southern California region, maybe even go up to San Francisco, maybe even go to New York and a couple of other places, and really try to spend some time catching up with people, because I honestly don't know how long I'm going to keep this traveling up, folks. It's kind of getting more and more difficult to travel. The older you get, the more tiresome it becomes. These economy seats in planes really do take a toll on you after a while, and I seem to be spending so much time in them. But anyway, that's another story. But even through a lot of the stuff that I've said today, I mean, as I said earlier, this has probably seemed like a pretty negative show in a lot of ways because, you know, I've kind of offered a rather sober view of what's actually going on in the world. But through it all, you know, it's important that you don't lose heart through all this. I mean, as I've so often said, you can't heal a problem or rectify a problem if you're not aware of what the problem is. And there's no good looking at the world through rose-coloured glasses. There really isn't. I mean, if we're not prepared to identify things and name them to what they really are, then what's the point of doing any of this research at all? What's the point of even mounting any type of resistance if we're going to be half-hearted about it? If we're not going to call things for what they are, then it's not really going to mean anything. So it's important that people look at all this stuff. I really think it is. And it's important that people be realistic about it. You know, and if you think that we are going somewhere or there is some big wave building, I mean, get offline for a little while. That's all I can really recommend. Go out and have a look at your world. Go out and wander around the cities and observe the way I do. Just go to places where you can meet random people and talk to random people and see how they feel about things. You know, a lot of people are really stuck in the matrix. A lot of people are very drone-like, and they view people who are awake in something akin to fear. They really do. They're very fearful of people pointing out reality to them. They're very scared of people who think outside the box. This is all due to the programming that they receive, due to the input they've got from the television and newspapers and all of the stuff that, I mean, we know what it is, folks. We know how it's done. We've talked about it for years on end, how it's done. But we're getting to a point now where there's a certain separation happening. So as much as you want to be active in this community and you want to spread information, it's a great idea that you do. But through it all, pay attention and be careful. You don't allow people to view you as something too different to what they are. That's why you've got to be calm and collected and be passionate, but be realistic and be friendly in what you do, in your approach to these people. Don't let them see you as a threat. You know, people have to see that you're more empowered, that you're a better human being because you have this information. This is something that I've been saying right back since the beginning. Back since I did my very first show in 2008, my very first interview in 2008, I think I said this. Now, people have to see that you are a better person because you have this information. You can't be there screaming fear and acting like you're someone that is paranoid because this just freaks them out and they see you as a threat. They think you've got mental problems, you've got whatever the latest illness or ADD or emotional disorder that the government has kicked up to deal with any emotion that anyone displays. And that's what they do. You know, as soon as you display some sort of an emotion, they just categorize it as some type of hyperspectrum disorder, and they give you medication for it, you know. Any type of thinking outside of the box, any type of emotion that anybody displayed is being categorized as a mental illness. So you've got to be careful, folks. You've got to be really careful in how you bring this information to people and how far you are prepared to put your face and put your name out there and just what the repercussions may be if you choose to do so in a unrealistic manner. I mean, for all his good intentions and good purposes, this is what Eli High Priest has done, unfortunately, by announcing publicly, I believe, that he carried out this hack against the government database. I mean, this is just not a smart thing to do, folks. So You've got to be careful with the way you approach things, and I don't recommend hacking into any databases at all. I mean, we know what's going on. All you've really got to do if you want to address this system and face this system and call it for what it is step into your humanity, step into your moral compass, because everything about this system causes you to step outside that. You know, and if you truly are human and you really act human in the way you approach this system, it can't really touch you. It can't really come for you. You know, it's when you start trying to use the legal system against itself and all this sort of stuff. I mean, you can to a degree. You can use the legal system against the government to a certain degree. But when you start going for really big fish, like the Prime Minister or the President or stuff like this, I mean, there's no point in trying to do this, folks, because you're just going to get eaten up by the system. What people have to realize is that the system itself only exists because we believe it is real, but essentially it's just a fiction, it's just an idea. You know, and ultimately we've got to the time in human existence where we need a new idea, folks, we really do. The old idea isn't working very well. I suppose it's working very well for those who run the idea, but it's certainly not working very well for the rest of us. And just spreading that type of empowerment to people, I believe, is what will change things. I really do. You know, I think all the change has to come from within the hearts of the people. I think we have to realize that we are the bottom rung of the pyramid. We are that base layer of bricks. We are the foundation that holds up the entire structure. There may be a pyramid at the top. There may be that eye at the top that is all-encompassing and all-knowing and sees what's going on. But we are the ones who hold it up simply because we believe in the idea of authority. We believe in the idea of government. We believe in the idea of the world being in the state that it's in and being just the way it is, and that's just the way things are, because that's what we're trained to believe. You know, but if there's some way, I mean, some hope of people pulling the blinkers away and seeing things for what they are, then we need to pursue that way. We need to pursue that hope and find that path. I mean, I still have an enormous amount of faith in humanity through all of this. And even if there is some big change coming, even if it's a cataclysm, even if it's a reset, even if it is a digital dystopia that's coming, through it all, I don't think the human spirit will be completely squashed. I think we will prevail. And whatever does come, folks, it's going to be determined by what steps we take now. And our preparedness to call things for what they are and face the truth of this world, or our preparedness to simply roll over on command and believe it won't come for us, when the reality is that it already has, folks. It's already here. Everything we've been talking about for years, it's already here. It's just consolidating its power. And it's about time people notice that. It really is, because once they do, as I have said so often, we seriously could change the world in a day. And, well, folks, once again, we are getting to that time where we are coming to the end of the show. And, look, I'm very sorry that I didn't bring you a broadcast for the last 2 weeks, which is very difficult with traveling, and even with this broadcast as well. If you're watching this on YouTube, I apologize for the very likely mostly unrelated video material you've been watching while I've been delivering this week's monologue, because I just simply haven't had time to construct a proper video clip or really get things done properly at all. It's actually quite difficult to get these shows done when you're at the whim of motels and all sorts of stuff and traveling. So I've done my best, and I will be back on the air next week. Probably I'll bring you something a little bit more relevant. I mean, it's been a little bit of a scattered show this week because my thoughts are pretty scattered at the moment. But thank you for tuning in anyway. It's been a pleasure to come and talk to you. And again, thank you to all the many people who send me so many kind emails. Thanks for bearing with me through these last couple of weeks. And thank you again to all my Patreon supporters and subscribers. I couldn't do any of this were it not for the support that you people give me. And I seriously cannot thank you enough, because, you know, all the people that I reach and all the waves that I can make all comes from the support of you people. I couldn't do any of it without you. So you are as much on the front line with me as I am. And I thank you for allowing this work to continue. But, folks, that is it for me. I've completely run out of time. I look forward to speaking to you again next week, when I'll be speaking to you from Australia, provided I get entry back into Australia. Okay, you never know the way things are going these days, but I'll look forward to speaking to you then anyway, and please take very good care until then. In Lakesh.